Mike McEntee. Let's look on the positive side of things today. You can't lose a fifth Super Bowl if you don't play in it. Okay, that's about the list of positives there. You know, I warned you about this. I said it wasn't a question of if, but when the Vikings would break your heart into a thousand tiny little ice cubes, and that happened yesterday. I couldn't bring myself to watch the game. I actually hid away someplace else and did not watch. I'm sorry. I was planning on being someplace else. It wasn't like I had a premonition. But, you know, the Vikings game, former Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback, I think, expressed the opinion best. He was on Twitter and said, super excited about Minneapolis hosting the Super Bowl, but after yesterday's Vikings loss, I feel kind of like I'm bartending at the wedding of the girlfriend who dumped me. I think that's the way a lot of people are viewing the Super Bowl right now, is, yeah, it's going to be fun, but what could have been really just colors the whole look of that. And the other thing that colors your look of the world today is probably that snowstorm that's outside. The snow that's coming down. The National Guard has been called out. The governor has called out the National Guard to help stranded motorists in southern Minnesota. That is how hard this stuff is coming down. We have snow emergencies. Here's the details. Snow emergency in Minneapolis starting at 9 o'clock tonight. Do not park on either side of a snow emergency route until 8 a.m. or the street is fully plowed both sides. We have a snow emergency also declared in St. Paul beginning at 9 o'clock. All night routes will be plowed. If your vehicle is on the night route at 9 o'clock or afterwards, it will be ticketed and towed. And we know how much fun that can be. The airport had 4 runways closed at one point today. MnDOT is out there gang plowing the interstates and the highways, or, you know, the plows going one big line to get them all at once. And if you are thinking of driving anywhere right now, I looked at the traffic map just a moment ago, and it was red, 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 which means everything is stopped, stop, stop. So just, you know, if you don't have to go anywhere, don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. That's probably the best advice we can give you today, because you will get stuck. You will get there. It will take a lot longer than you want to be. And so just stay home. Listen to us here on the radio. And if you are stuck in traffic, well, you can listen to us on the radio too. So we have got our own shutdown going here with traffic. We had, and at the moment, I guess technically still do, have a government shutdown in Washington, D.C. But things are changing. There's a thaw going on. And joining us to talk about that is Tim Meyer, the executive editor with Talk Media News. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. There definitely is a thaw going on right now, and it looks perhaps just a temporary thaw, Mike. We're waiting right now for the Senate to vote, and it looks like what's going to happen procedurally, the Senate will vote, will end the shutdown. The House will then try to do an extension, and they will pass this three-week extension to February 9th, where then again, guess what? We do this all over again. And what's holding up everything right now is the immigration, DACA, and where the Republicans and Democrats are really on polar opposites. And the problem here is that, you know, right now, the Republicans have promised, McConnell has promised Schumer that they will revisit DACA before that deadline of February 9th, where we do this entire thing all over again. Will the Republicans honestly do that? I don't know if they're going to do it, but, you know, that's going to be the big issue. Right now, it doesn't look like there's any agreement in terms of getting the DACA situation solved.
Well, what changed between Friday and today? Because I've been trying to parse that out, and I haven't been able to figure it out. I saw the Trump campaign sending out an email saying Democrats caved. Is that what happened, or what happened here?
Lot of people on the left, the hard progressives, are going to say that the Democrats did cave on this situation. But I think what had happened really was this promise that they are going to seriously talk about DACA. Two Democrats just recently went to the White House to talk to President Trump about immigration. So there is some movement there, but the problems happen is we have a very unpredictable president. And he said he would sign, you know, the 3-week extension. I'm not sure he will or if he won't, because sometimes he said, if you recall, you know, Graham and Schumer had worked out a bipartisan agreement, you know, before, brought it to the president, and he basically was going to sign it until he talked to Steve Miller and company, and then he decided against it at that point. So it's still difficult to say with an unpredictable president.
You know, Donald Trump has said in the past that one of his assets is being unpredictable. We're not going to tell you what we're doing overseas. We're not going to tell you what we're going to do here, because we're telegraphing that. It seems to be that's the same way he runs domestic policy and domestic politics. And while there's maybe a certain, you know, well, okay, it makes sense not to tell your enemies what you're going to do. Here in the United States, when you're trying to work on compromise and work out deals, and you're not even telling your own party what you're going to do and stand by it, that seems to be a bad strategy.
I think it's somewhat backfired on both parties. And you know, they're playing the PR game right now and saying who's at fault for this. But really, the people that suffer, the people that are not getting their paychecks, it's the veterans, it's you know, you've got a lot of tourists in Washington, D.C., and the first thing you saw is everything just shut down and closed. So the economy is impacted by, you know, although it's just a short term right now, but it certainly is impacted in the tourism out here. But also TSA, these individuals who are the TSA agents, you know, they weren't going to get paid. And, you know, eventually they will get paid for those days, but, you know, they would not have gotten paid if this continued. And, you know, these are people that aren't making the thousands and the millions of dollars that, you know, many of our congressmen are millionaires. They don't need the money. Ironically, they were still getting a check during this entire shutdown.
You know, I think our representative, Rick Nolan, actually introduced some legislation. I don't know where it's going to go, if it's going to go anywhere, saying Congress can't get paid if indeed the government shuts down. I have no idea if there'll be a hearing on something.
Yeah,
like
that was introduced, but that again is something like the throw for PR. Look, we're not going to take money, or he wasn't going to take money, and so forth. It's a nice PR move. Let's see what happens in the next few weeks to see if we go back to this situation where the government shuts down again. We supposedly have the greatest deal maker at the White House, but I think part of being a leader, you know, and I think I haven't seen this yet in the White House, is sometimes you have to do what's right for the people and tell your own party, like, look, we have to do this. We have to make this compromise, and we have to do this for the American people, not for the party. And you saw several presidents, even Republican presidents, have done that. And you go back to Read My Lips, No New Taxes, and he did it. We're talking about Bush did it. Bush 1 did it because he had to at that particular time. And there's a lot of different cases like that throughout history where presidents had to make tough decisions, often going against their own party. And the DACA and the Dreamers might be it right now, because I don't think the Republicans want to be looked upon as they're the enforcers and not the compassionate party of Lincoln that, you know, opens up their arms to people and refugees and aspect. I don't think they want to just be talked about as the guys that throw people out of this country. And so in that aspect, I think they lose when you come to the polls, because people generally like compassionate politicians as well, people in power and who can actually feel the pain. And, you know, Bill Clinton did that extremely well when he was in office. And I think, you know, that's something that I think voters look for.
We're speaking with Tim Meyer, who's the executive editor with Talk Media News. We're talking about the government shutdown, which is about to thaw, as we said, maybe just temporarily. Tim, one of the things that's that's been a concern here. I mean, the spin on this began before the actual shutdown was, who's to blame for this? And the question is, does it really matter? Because when we look back at other government shutdowns, the blame, it doesn't seem stuck to anybody, and nobody seemed to care later. I'm wondering, is that going to really play a part in the 2018 midterms? Will the results of the DACA, whatever comes out of it, play a result? What might impact the 2018?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike, because it becomes who wins the PR game. There are two polls that were taken. One poll just said, who do you blame for this government shutdown? And majority of the people said they blame the Republicans. When the question is rephrased saying, like, you know, the government shutdowns because they couldn't come to an agreement on DACA, who do you blame? Majority of people blame the Democrats. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. How does it affect the 2018 elections? For this small shutdown, I don't think it will have an effect. If the government shuts down again in February, if they cannot come to an agreement, I think it'll have a tremendous impact. And I think in the end, it could hurt the Republicans tremendously if they're not careful, because a lot of people in America, in the United States, are supportive of these 800,000 DACA individuals. I mean, they're basically have lived in this country. They have everything basically except that citizenship card. And they don't even know, some of them don't even know their own native language, Mike. They're as American as you and me. And I think there's a strong aspect of Americans feeling that they should be in the country. Now, there's going to be some faction of individuals saying it should be a total separate and separate from the budget, and we should vote on that as a separate issue and work that out. But I think that's going to be a tough sell when it comes to 2018, and I think the Republicans may find themselves in a little trouble on what's going on, particularly at the White House, although one of the lowest approval ratings of a president in the history of the United States.
Yeah, it's tough to win when you're. It's tough to lead and have the bully pulpit when you have so little support. I mean, yeah, Trump, as you mentioned here, he had the lowest numbers going into serving as president, the lowest approval ratings, and he has the lowest approval ratings after 1 year. When you're looking, you've been through several presidents. When you look at this first year of the Trump presidency, what do you see?
On the first year of the president, I see a president that has a problem. He's his worst nightmare. If he would have focused strictly on some of the things that, you know, we got to give him credit for, I mean, ISIS, he has, you know, our military has done an excellent job in defeating ISIS, and a lot of the strengths and strongholds that they had, they no longer have. But you don't see that message, you know, being pumped out to the extent. The economy, it's now close to 80 records set on the Dow under the Trump administration. Now, granted, a lot of this we saw the turn of the economy during President Obama, and President Obama's deserves a lot of credit for this, but after a while, you have to say, look, the deregulation, a lot of other things, and even the Dow is up today with the government shutdown to break another record of over 26. Okay, you know, so those are the things that I think get lost in his first year of presidency, because every time there's some positive thing, whether it's low unemployment rates, defeating ISIS, small businesses, entrepreneurship, all of this stuff that's been good for economy, he stumbles into something through a tweet, says something total, and the whole story of all his things that he has done well for the country or things that are doing well is sort of lost and almost an embarrassment, where people look at him, he's crude, he's rude, he's an embarrassment at times. I have a hard time explaining to my daughters or my children and some of the language he chooses and so forth, and he's not a representative. But at the same time, the question becomes, is James Carville right? It's the economy. When he said it's the economy, stupid. He didn't care about Clinton's affairs. It's the economy. That's going to be an interesting question in today's society. I'm not so sure if that plays well, because we've seen with the women's movement, with the Me Too movement, that there's a lot of people out there that said enough is enough right now. And character, morality, compassion, they look into a leader, and those are some of the shortfalls of his first year as president.
And as we've seen, special elections that we've seen here just recently, Democrats have been cleaning up in Republican areas, so that has to be a concern. The real question is, what is Trump's base response to all of this? The Republican response to all this, because Republicans, you know, when they see him being rude and crude, there's a certain part of the base that says, well, yeah, but that's our guy. He's talking the way that we think, and therefore we support him. Is he going to continue to have the support of the Republican Party as he continues
to
do this?
Well, you know,
this?
I'll give you the tax reform, which we didn't mention, is a huge thing for, and I think sometimes the Democrats don't understand, even though it's a 7-year, maybe a temporary situation, but, you know, I've watched analysts and on the left, and they talk about, hey, it's only $100, somebody's check, $100, big deal, $600 more a month. But you and I know $600 more a month for a family who's struggling to make their mortgage, their rent, or something to that, to pay for daycare, is tremendous. And whether it's 7 years or 6 years or whether it ends, it's tremendous to them. And that's something that I think is lost in the entire aspect of the president. But, you know, the question is, does that really, you know, is that going to play out in the end in terms of votes in for midterms for Republicans? And the reason I always bring this up is that Ryan was trying to get a tax reform package for a long, long time. And that's why he puts up with a lot of different things, because what's on his political agenda, he feels he can get passed with a Republican president. And that's why they, you know, he doesn't come out very strongly and condemn things that he says or does, you know, and it frustrates, I think, a lot of people, a lot of moderates in the party that's just are frustrated that no one's coming out and just taking that. I mean, we've seen, some senators come out like McCain and so forth and basically blast Trump when needed, but we don't see enough of that. And I think the party, I would say the party has a problem with that. And I think that opens up a lot of avenues for the Democrats to say, look, there's no leader among the GOP that's coming out strongly and condemning. Everybody should condemn the asshole remarks that he made about these countries that, you know, that was just an unbelievable misstep in terms of what he did.
It's going to be interesting to see how that continues to play out and how much people remember when we get to November, because that's a long time from now. We've been talking with Tim Meyer, the executive editor of Talk Media News. And Tim, I know you have to run, but shutdown, just recapping for people. We have the Senate has voted or is about to vote to rescind the shutdown, and that's going over the House, or where are we on that?
We're still waiting for the crucial vote, but it's going to pass. I'm telling you right now, it's going to go to the House, and the House will then vote for the extension for 3 weeks. President will probably most likely sign it unless something crazy happens, you know, and often us in the press, we just assume that the president's going to do this, and all of a sudden he takes a crazy left turn. And, you know, but in this case, he has tweeted out, you know, that 3 weeks would be something good, and he has already made steps bring Democrats in to talk about immigration. So we'll see what happens, and hopefully they'll get this thing going so, you know, the people do not lose their paychecks, you know, and our vets and so forth.
All right. You keep an eye on it. We'll be checking back with you, of course, you and Ellen Ratner, on what's going on in Washington. Thank you again, Tim.
You bet, Mike. Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break up next. We'll open the phones if you want to talk, 952-946-6205. You want to vent about the Vikings? Maybe you've got some thoughts about the shutdown. Otherwise, I've got some interesting tidbits to pass along. That's all next year on AM 950.
As with their Eat Street sister on Nicollet Avenue, the Bad Waitress at 700 Central and Northeast is committed to working with local purveyors and serving organic food whenever possible. But the Northeast location is a bit more grown up. This finer diner has a full bar serving craft cocktails and a brand new inventive dinner menu, including the chicken and waffle, with roasted half chicken, bourbon pickled jalapeno corn waffle, and a roasted poblano gravy. Check out the Northeast menu at thebadwaitress.com.
Chocolat Celeste is a true celebration. This is Colette, and we've created two themed chocolate collections for this year's football playoffs. These chocolates are the world's finest artisan chocolates with distinct, unforgettable flavors that will sweeten your team's victory and soften the sting of defeat. Having a party? Skol! Check out our football-themed chocolates. We're an approved vendor through the NFL Business Connect program. Call 651-644-3823 or visit ChocolatCeleste.com.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Northeast Minneapolis is known for its creativity, and you'll know exactly why when you eat at Hazel's Northeast. Their creatively prepared comfort food will have you coming back week after week. Breakfasts like biscuits and gravy, granola pancakes, and brisket hash. For lunch, homemade soup, and one of the best Reubens in town. And don't miss the daily risotto or Chef Ali's ever-changing dinner specials. Come on in, bring the whole family. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family-owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis.
Hey, it's Mike McAtee back here on AM 950.
Be ready to act.
952-946-6205. If you have anything you want to say today, just considering maybe you're stuck in the car, you're venting about the weather, you're venting about the Vikings, maybe you're upset with the way that the shutdown was handled.
Hey, Mike, got to chime in here. We're getting some background audio, I think, from you there.
Okay, let me see if I can get rid of that. One moment.
Irwin says, while most days are still good in Minnesota in terms of air quality, California's wildfires.
Sorry about that, folks. I will just
definitely.
There we go. Okay. Sorry about that. We've got a little different setup here. It's Mike McAtee back with you now. Maybe if you can hear me, if you are upset about the Vikings or the weather or the shutdown, you can give me a call 952-946-6205. I have some things I wanted to pass along to you though, that some important bits of news. And one of them is coming out of Washington, D.C. You heard about the $130,000 payoff that the somebody did for Donald Trump to keep porn star Stormy Daniels quiet right before the 2016 election. Apparently, the two of them had some sort of sexual involvement that that she was going to speak out about, and apparently $130,000 kept her quiet. She's still not talking about it. She just smiles a lot and has begun the Make America Horny Again tour. and it's been interesting. There's a story in the New York Times about how journalists were flocking to some club to see her, I guess under the pretense that they were doing a story. But the Common Cause, this is one of the nonprofit government watchdog group, is arguing that the settlement that was paid to Stormy Daniels amounted to an unreported in-kind contribution to Donald Trump's campaign. And the group is calling on the Justice Department and the Federal Election Commission to investigate. Now, this settlement, according to a campaign expert with Common Cause, the settlement should have been considered a campaign expense because, quote, the funds were paid for the purpose of influencing the 2016 presidential election. That's Paul S. Ryan. That's the letter he sent to Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. So it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, maybe the moral outrage over something like that isn't going to matter, but maybe the election campaign violation might. And speaking of elections, a gerrymander has been struck down in Pennsylvania, and this could impact the Republicans' control of Congress. This is in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court today. They struck down the state's congressional map. That's a major victory for Democrats, who said that the 18 districts were unconstitutionally gerrymandered to benefit Republicans. The court said the boundaries, quote, clearly and plainly and palpably violate the state's constitution and blocked it from remaining in effect for the 2018 elections. Now, the justices gave the Republican-controlled legislature until just February 9th. I think that's the same number of weeks we have until the shutdown might happen again, to pass a replacement. And the Democratic governor, Tom Wolf, until February 15th to submit it to the court. Otherwise, the justices said they will adopt a plan and of their own to keep the May 15th primary election on track. The decision has immediate impacts for the 2018 election, meaning that 14 sitting members of Congress and dozens more people are running or considering running in districts they may no longer live in, which you cannot do, apparently, in Pennsylvania. You can do that in Minnesota. It also has implications for the GOP control of Congress, since only Texas, California, and Florida send more Republicans to the U.S. House than Pennsylvania. Now, this decision comes as the U.S. Supreme Court is weighing whether redistricting can be so partisan that it violates the U.S. Constitution. Those are cases from Maryland and Wisconsin. And the court has never struck down an election map as a partisan gerrymander. And just to follow up on a story that we were talking about last week, remember we were talking about Jennifer Carnahan, the Republican Party chair, had said she wanted a 10% commission from large donations. That seems like forever ago in the news cycle, but the party's executive committee has voted to let her do that, retroactive to the last quarter of 2017. So in addition to her $67,000 she gets the 10% commission on large party donations, about $24,000. And in case you're wondering how that compares to the Democratic Party chairman, the DFL party chairman here in Minnesota, Ken Martin, he makes about $107,000. So she wouldn't be making quite as much, but she would be making money directly from campaign contributions, which is something that is unheard of in terms of how a political party works in Minnesota. But the Republican Executive Committee said, what the heck, we're going to go for that. I tell you what, we are going to take a break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about a decision today, an announcement today from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that really is another way to bring discrimination into just how health and human services work. We'll talk about that coming up here next on the Mike McEntee Show.
Reimagine a world without violence. On Saturday, January 27th, you're invited to participate in this day-long conference sponsored by Plymouth Congregational Church and the Reimagining Community. Opening and closing services will be led by musician Sarah Thompson. Workshop sessions will focus on immigration, the violence of racism, and how to begin dismantling white supremacy, the LGBTQ community and the violence they live with every day, facing trauma, the police community relationship, using art to help us reimagine nonviolent communication practices within families, and much more. This is the 25th anniversary of the original Reimagining Conference. Come join with others in exploring nonviolence, peace, and healing, with attention to the individual, family, and community. Again, this day-long conference takes place Saturday, January 27th at Plymouth Congregational Church in downtown Minneapolis. Online registration is open until January 23rd, with early bird registration available through January 15th. Find a full schedule of events and register online at reimaginingcommunity.org. Let's reimagine a world without violence together.
While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood-burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Hey, it's Mike McEntee back with you. We are recapping the major news of the day. The government is unshutting down here soon, apparently, as Donald Trump is, and the Democrats and the Republicans have agreed to something that's going to keep things going for three more weeks. The traffic is shut down. It is horrible out there as the winter storm here continues to just ravage the Twin Cities in Minnesota. The governor has called out the National Guard to help stranded motorists, and it's just kind of a crummy day because the Vikings lost yesterday. So we're all kind of down about that, but we're keeping our spirits up. So let's talk here for a moment about religious freedom. The Trump administration says it is giving religious freedom to health workers, but that religious freedom may just be another way to say discrimination. Today, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced the formation of a new Conscience and Religious Freedom Division. Yes, that is a title, in the Health and Human Service Office for Civil Rights. Joining me to talk about this is Dr. Laura Durso, who is the Vice President of LGBT Research and Communications at the Center for American Progress. There we go. Dr. Durso, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So explain to me, I threw out a lot of acronyms and Health and Human Services. What exactly is the change that is being made?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I think it's important to start with, the Obama administration and what it was doing for people of all types and in healthcare. And what the Obama administration did after the passage of the Affordable Care Act was to implement new non-discrimination protections that said, you know, for lots of different types of people, including LGBT people who I work on behalf of, that you can't be discriminated against in healthcare. And it's something that we know that happened, unfortunately quite a bit, that folks are turned away from care or mistreated in healthcare settings. And so those non-discrimination protections are in place. What the Trump administration has now decided to do is to open up, as you said, a new office within the Office of Civil Rights, which traditionally has been a place where people could go and see their rights protected. And now we fear the opposite may be happening with this new division, because they're putting out new rules that would allow hospitals, doctors, nurses, other healthcare workers to determine a patient's care based on their own personal religious beliefs, not what's best for the patient themselves. So we're really fearful that this is enshrining a new set of religious beliefs into public policy and really disregarding the harm that could come to patients who may be turned away or denied life-saving care.
Well, I thought that, doctors, medical practitioners took some sort of oath saying that they are going to help the patient. How can this be superseded by religion?
It's a great question, and something that sort of shocks the conscience to think about the Trump administration offering up an opportunity to opt out of care, this could be folks who, wouldn't check you in for a procedure, not just like seeing the doctor, but if you think about all the steps in going to access healthcare, that folks might be turned away. There's a number of different protections in law that allow for example, people who don't want to provide abortion care, that any given provider does not have to do that. But they do need to ensure that those kinds of procedures are available to people. And what we're fearful of with this office and with this new rule is that it's really broadening the scope of who can opt out of care and really what that assertion is. So if people wrongly believe that birth control causes abortions, and that they might assert that belief and deny someone the use of contraceptives, that would be now permitted under this new regulation, and that people may be, institutions may be found not in compliance if they're not ensuring that healthcare workers have the ability to do that. So it's sort of anti-science, it's anti-ethics, I think, and potentially really problematic, not just for people seeking abortion care, but for other people as well.
Religion, a lot of medical work is funded by the government, which you'd think would make this unconstitutional, but the Trump administration says apparently that's not the case because private religious groups often do the work even though they get the funding. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, one, I think, in five beds hospital beds in the country are run by Catholic hospitals, and so it starts to really be this question of access, that this isn't, this could be a real tremendous problem for people who, for example, live in areas where healthcare access is already extremely limited. We did a survey of LGBTQ people, nationwide survey, nationally representative data, so it's really about the best data you can get. And 41% of people who lived in non-metropolitan areas said that it would be very difficult or not possible at all to find the same type of service at a hospital if they were turned away. And so, at the end of the day, what we're talking about is taxpayer dollars and millions of dollars potentially going to enable the kind of discrimination that, can risk people's lives. We know that stigma negatively impacts health and that people are historically turned away from care. And this is just going to complicate the healthcare landscape. It's going to sow confusion. It's going to strike fear in the hearts of people who might already be concerned about their ability to access healthcare. And this is, as I said, just going to harm people's health. This isn't going to solve a problem that the administration claims that it's trying to solve.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked by that statistic in your survey that says 12% of transgender respondents said a healthcare provider refused to give them care related to gender transition. I mean, that's shocking because, you know, again, I go back to, you know, the Hippocratic Oath that you're there to help the patient. And it's shocking to me that there are doctors that are already out there in the system who say, yeah, I just don't want to deal with this. I don't want... I mean, did we know that? Did you have a sense of that before the survey?
Yeah, unfortunately, being transgender was often a pre-existing condition when it came to having access to health insurance coverage or to getting care. We know that that was very true, that transgender people were locked out of the health insurance market. And really, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, that had changed. And we saw people re-engaging with the marketplace and getting new coverage that, honest to God, saves people's lives. And I think it's important to know that we are talking about transition-related care and medical procedures that are necessary to treat gender dysphoria, but this kind of a regulation and the plans that we think are moving forward at this new division are also going to say that, you know, it's okay to not treat a transgender person for a broken arm or for the common cold. We had those 12% of people in our survey say they were denied transition-related care, but nearly 30% of people said that they were refused any kind of care by a doctor or another provider. And so, you know, I think as folks are coming to learn who transgender people are and what their healthcare needs are, we often focus on the types of transition-related care that people need. But we all go to the doctor for lots of different reasons. And I think it's, you know, just heartbreaking to think about someone going to receive cancer treatment. And if someone, discriminates against them because they happen to be transgender, you know, what might that mean to that patient and how on earth will they get better? So this is really what one of the potential outcomes of this office is, that we're not just going to see people getting turned away for transition-related care, but for very common medical procedures as well.
I mean, I'm going to go back to that statistic because that's not one that I had read yet, that nearly one out of three doctors refuse care to people because they're transgender. That
30% of transgender people have said that the doctor denied them care. Yeah, so 3 in 10 trans people have been turned away for any kind of procedure on the basis of their gender identity. It's really heartbreaking.
I mean, that's amazing that, you know, here we are. This is the year 2018, and America still, I mean, highly educated people. I mean, that's who we doctors are, at least I hope they are, is highly educated people are making those types of decisions. I mean, it is a related issue here, but even more shocks me or distresses me than even what the Trump administration is saying here today, because we already have this kind of this ingrained behavior that's already in the medical community. Is there any hope that that is going to change, that people, that there's going to be some sort of education, that doctors themselves are going to say, hey, this is what I got to do, or any of the major, you know, physician organizations advocating that this needs to change, or is this kind of, everybody's kind of on their own here?
Yeah, I do think that our system will be changing. For example, the American Psychiatric Association was out quickly with a statement opposing this office and warning of potential discrimination that could come. So we are seeing healthcare providers, both medical and mental health associations, that are weighing in to say that discrimination hurts their patients and it doesn't stand. You know, the country is really coming to understand trans people. It used to be that about only 1 in 10 people said they knew a transgender person. That's doubled in the past several years. So we're starting to get a glimpse of who trans people are and what they need. And the medical profession has also been slowly coming to understand. I think about the average number of hours that medical students receive of LGBTQ inclusive training is about zero. We've got a places to go to make sure that our medical trainees and medical students and residents understand the healthcare needs of transgender people. But there are policies and laws in place here in D.C. where I live. There are cultural competency requirements for licensed healthcare providers to make sure that they know the unique needs of this population. And so I do expect that things will change for the better. And then I also expect that you'll see, again, those medical and mental health professionals coming out to say that discrimination is wrong and it's hurtful, and these are not the types of regulations that the federal government should be putting forth.
Now, this is, again, this is a change here at the Health and Human Services at the federal level. Is that going to impact the states? Because Minnesota, of course, as a state here, we're very progressive. We like to think that that's not the way this state operates. But by the federal government making a change like this, is that going to allow that to happen in states such as Minnesota?
You know, I think it will in a couple of different ways. One thing is that the Office of Civil Rights at the federal level has the ability to launch investigations. And so I'm fearful of the chilling effect that might happen if hospitals and other healthcare clinics are worried that the federal government is going to come after them for not properly, in their view, accommodating the religious beliefs of different providers and staff. You know, that what... How is it that they're going to be able to treat their patients equally if they're worried that the federal government is coming after them? I am also fearful that this kind of a regulation will actually preempt what good state laws, state or local laws, might be in place. And to say, the federal government might take action against a state that is trying to protect its citizens. And so, again, I think this just complicates the landscape that we're in. It's going to sow confusion. Providers will be concerned. I think policymakers have a right to be concerned. And this isn't the direction that we need to go in to ensure that everybody is healthy and well in this country. It's really, really problematic.
Yeah, is not the word to use here, but it sounds like something that, oh, hey, that's not going to impact us. But remember, folks, everybody that you know, either somebody you know or somebody that they, you know, somebody else that they know, there's somebody who is LGBTQ, you know, transgendered. It's we're all part of the same community here. And so when this one thing happens to impact somebody in our community, it impacts all of us. I think that's why we should be concerned. We've been talking with Dr. Laura Durso, who is the Vice President of LGBT Research and Communications at the Center for American Progress. You can find more about the American Progress organization over at AmericanProgress.org. Dr. Durso, I appreciate your help here today.
It's really been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure thing. Hey, we're going to take a break here. You know, when we come back, we will talk about something that's going on with clean air and how Minnesotans are coming up with a wonderful solution that you should be interested in. And the phones are open, 952-946-6205. You're down about the Vikings. You're down about the government shutdown. Down about the weather. Just give me a call. 952-946-6205. It's the Mike McEntee Show.
This is Dan Brooks, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with RBC Wealth Management. For the past 19 years, I've been managing wealth for individuals, institutions, and corporate retirement plan sponsors. Throughout my career, I've seen common traits in successful investors. They include the courage to be diversified, the willingness to work with a professional, the discipline to follow a plan, and patience. I welcome the opportunity to help contribute to your financial success. Call me at 612-371-2396.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
The Electric Fetus wants your used records. The used vinyl buying bonanza is going on now at the Electric Fetus. Sell your vinyl now through January 31st and receive an extra 50% based on a quote if you choose store credit. That's 50% more to use on music or even the gift department. So there's no better time to bring in your used LPs. Find the Electric Fetus just south of downtown Minneapolis at 2000 4th Avenue South. Open 9 to 9 on weekdays, 9 to 8 Saturday, and 11 to 6 on Sunday. More at electricfetus.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Hey, welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950 on a very snowy, ugly commute here through the Twin Cities and a depressing day if you are a Vikings fan. If you want to talk about any of those things, 952-946-6205. Brett, you did watch the game yesterday. You suffered through it.
I unfortunately did, correct.
Yeah, I didn't. I was. I had a previous thing I had to do, and actually was someplace where I couldn't even use my phone to see what was going on. So I was had no idea what was happening until I got out and I saw the score. It was a rout. I looked at the scoreboard. It looked like they were doing okay in the first quarter, and then things went to hell in a handbasket, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much. Their defense did not play well at all. The big strength on their team was their big weakness.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I've been reading the people's reaction to this. This kind of puts a sour taste in the Super Bowl party that we are going to have here. That we are going to have here in a couple of weeks. You know, it's a big deal for Minneapolis. But to be that close, a bridesmaid instead of the bride, as I said at the beginning of the show, Mayor Ryback said it's kind of like being the bartender at a wedding for your girlfriend who dumped you. You know, it's just this has got to be upsetting and depressing to people. And same thing here with the weather. I was reading here now out at the airport. I mean, you think you've got travel problems around here, the city today at the airport. Everything has been shut down until let's see. This is the official notice. So air travel has been interrupted at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. All inbound flights are being held at their origin until 4 o'clock. So that was an hour ago. This was according to FlightAware. There are 157 flights into and out of Minneapolis-St. Paul have been scrubbed and another 90 delayed. And inbound flights are being delayed about an average of 6 hours. So if you're traveling or you have somebody traveling out of the airport, things are just an absolute mess. The governor's called out the National Guard, and they've to help people stranded by the storm. They have opened up the Owatonna Armory to help travelers in the area. The Red Cross is on the site. No one's apparently there yet, but it's just crummy weather. And if you were planning on going to a park and recs, anything in Minneapolis, everything is shutting down by 6 o'clock. Everything's been canceled. Metro buses here are running behind schedule. 28% experiencing delays. And here's the bad news: things are just going to continue to get worse. The storm is expected now to dump up to 10 inches. Right across the heart of the Twin Cities metro area, with heavier amounts expected in the southern and eastern suburbs. Yes, if you are in the St. Paul area, if you're down in Dakota County, you are getting really creamed by this, and it's going to continue to fall. And this is more than they originally forecast, so there's more pain here than we originally thought. So we're looking at 4 to 6 inches in places like Maple Grove and Rogers. We've got a blizzard warning out there for, I think down in Cannon Falls. This is bad. If you have to go someplace, be careful. If you don't have to go anywhere, don't. I mean, you know that by now, but I'm here as the voice of reason to give you an excuse not to go out there. All right? Just saying, okay? I've got a story. This is all bad news. I want to give you some good news today, okay? Minnesota scientists are headed to Texas this week to tout their innovation at a national conference on air quality. They have apparently figured out how to notify more Minnesotans sooner about dangerous air pollution levels. This is all while saving state money. Lori Stern has a story for us.
Scientists with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency have developed a way to notify more Minnesotans sooner about air pollution and save the state money at the same time. Since June, the agency has increased the number of locations it monitors and is using artificial intelligence to make more accurate forecasts. Steve Irwin is an air quality meteorologist with the MPCA. He says the new system will matter most to people working outdoors and those with respiratory issues.
It's good to limit your physical activity. Folks with asthma can review their asthma action plans, and they can just pay a little more attention to their symptoms. If they know the air quality is going to be poor, then they can be more cognizant of those things and be ready to act if something does go wrong.
The program relies on free online weather predictions in addition to the air quality monitors already in place. Irwin says thanks to artificial intelligence, forecasts can now take minutes instead of hours. The statewide program won a 2017 Innovation Award from the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Irwin says while most days are still good in Minnesota in terms of air quality, California's wildfires have had an effect.
Changing climate is definitely having an impact on our air quality here. Climate change has caused larger and longer droughts out west. It's also shortened the duration of the snowpack.
Irwin and a colleague will be presenting their innovation at a national conference on air quality in Texas this week. Air quality forecasts and alerts are available on the MPCA website or its mobile app. I'm Lori Stern, Minnesota News Connection.
And let me thank Lori Stern for that report. So, good news there in the sense that we're finding a way to let people know about air pollution. Obviously, we need to do something to fight that, and we need to do whatever we can to keep the air quality of our air and water, up there. And that fight is going to be fought again this year at the Minnesota Legislature. We expect that there's going to be several bills that are going to be introduced, especially in water quality, that might have some negative impact on that. We've talked about the mining that's going on that may have some negative impact on that. PolyMet, there's actually a hearing coming up on that on February 9th in Duluth. A lot of people are interested in that. And the Uptake is busy trying to cover as much of this as possible. The Uptake is going to be live from the Minnesota Legislature starting on February 20th, and we'll be broadcasting all of the big hearings, all the big sessions, and you're going to be able to watch that over at theuptake.org. You'll also be able to watch that on Facebook because we're live streaming the Facebook now this year, so that's an added bit of way of reaching you, and you're able to pay attention to what's going on. So the Uptake is providing that transparency. And as I've said for you before, I am the executive director of the Uptake. And, obviously a lot of the news that we pass along here on the program and on AM 950 comes from that source. So one of the things I want to remind you about is if indeed you value that kind of transparency, that kind of information, the ability to get to all that stuff, donating to the Uptake, even on a snowy, crummy day like today, is a good thing to do. It'll give you a warm feeling, and it helps, preserve, and protect democracy. So go over to theuptake.org and send in a donation. It's tax deductible. It's still tax deductible. So anyway, that's our report for today. Drive safely. Back here tomorrow. See ya.